Good afternoon, you are tuned in to Juno Afternoon here for Thursday, the 11th of August, the year 2016. Jeff Brown with you today. We're talking with Margo Connolly and Mason and Frank Conrad about UAS Enrollment Day. We'll talk with Sharon Gaiman and Missouri Smith about tryouts for this year's production of King Island Christmas. Sarah Lewis will be here to talk about her wild kitchen walk. And Nancy the Attorney will be here with Arts Up. That Writer's Almanac, Bruno, and music and more today on Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, it's rain. Low temperatures around 55 degrees. Forecast for tomorrow, rain likely, mostly before 1 p.m. Cloudy skies otherwise. Forecast for Saturday, rain with high temperatures near 58 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two tribes in the state of Oklahoma have reportedly reached a water rights settlement. Chickasaw and Choctaw Nation claims date back more than 100 years. According to the Associated Press, litigation over modern-day water rights have been ongoing for years. A formal announcement on the settlement is expected today. Wyoming's two tribes are skeptical of a Native American wildlife group's plan to expand the range of grizzly bears onto tribal lands. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, Guardians of Our Ancestors' Legacy, or GOAL, has proposed putting any grizzlies Wyoming considers over its population limit onto tribal lands.
Jason Valdez is the director of the Wind River Native Advocacy Center and the son of a longtime wildlife manager on the reservation. He says the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes are lucky to have lots of great habitat for grizzly bears.
We chose the Warm Valley, or the Uadi, for the plentiful fishing game. And this area ranges from 4,000 feet to 13,000 feet. That's got several hundred miles of rivers and streams and over 200 lakes. So we have ideal habitat for bears in both mountain ranges, the Owl Creeks to the north and the Wind Rivers to the west.
But Valdez says most tribes don't have such healthy habitat for the species. He says many reservation lands were whittled down by the federal government in the late 1800s to areas too small to host such large predators. But he does agree with GOAL that with so little good habitat, the grizzly shouldn't be removed from the endangered species list. And he says the state of Wyoming certainly shouldn't allow trophy hunting. He says the grizzly is highly respected in the traditions of both the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho.
We utilize our fisheries and our wildlife species to feed ourselves, not necessarily for trophy hunting. That's a worldview that was brought from Europeans.
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Director Dan Ash said the grizzly may be delisted as soon as the end of the year. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
The president of the Navajo Nation recently signed an order mandating sexual harassment training for all executive and judicial employees within the tribal government. It comes after the tribal council's sole female delegate claims she was harassed by other elected officials. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
President Russell Begay's office says the order was directly inspired by allegations made by Delegate Amber K. Nisbah-Crotty. It requires the executive and judicial branches to review Navajo Nation policies and for managers to quickly address alleged cases of harassment. Crotty recently spoke at a council meeting about crude comments made to her by a colleague. She said she'd also been groped while working as a legislative assistant.
This kind of vulgar personal attack, that affects you to the core of who you are as an individual. No one is above the law, and nobody should feel that where they are working is an unsafe environment. I couldn't allow another day for such type of comments to be part of the public record and then part of who we are as council.
Crotty is the chairwoman of the council's Sexual Assault Prevention Committee. She's working with the speaker's office to develop harassment training for lawmakers and staff. Crotty says the program should be in place by the end of September. According to the U.S. Justice Department, American Indians are 2.5 times more likely to suffer sexual assault than non-natives. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Many people in Indian country are cheering on Ricky Fowler, who's a member of the U.S. Olympic men's golf team. The golfer from California shared with the Navajo Times that part of his roots are from the Navajo Nation on his mother's side. Fowler has also played a part in helping Native young people. The 27-year-old has participated in NB3 Foundation golf tournaments. The foundation, created by fellow Native golfer Noda Begay, works to reduce childhood obesity and type 2 diabetes among Native youth. Olympic Golf Round 1 started today. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kiva New at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN. And by Humboldt State University's online Master of Social Work program, which focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/social work. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to the Juno Afternoon. First caster here. Talking about UAS Enrollment Day, Margo Connolly Mason and Frank Conrad. Thanks for coming down to the station.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yes.
So, what happens during Enrollment Day?
So, Enrollment Day is happening tomorrow, starting at 9 a.m. Out on the Auk Lake campus. And it's a way that students can come and get all of their enrollment needs taken care of. So, you can start fresh by applying for admission for the fall semester. If you've already applied, you can also then proceed with other steps that you might not have completed yet, such as meeting with an academic advisor in order to choose and register for classes. You can take your placement test in the Learning Center, talk with financial aid advisors, people in student accounts office. You can also apply for housing and get that taken care of, get your whale card. And then we're also offering tours for anybody who's interested in seeing more of campus before the semester starts.
What should people bring?
People should bring, if they are interested in getting their whale card or talking with financial aid about specifics, they should have a photo ID with them. As well, if they know their student ID, that's great to bring with you, but if not, we can look it up. If a student wants to apply for admission tomorrow, they do need their Social Security number. That's required in the application. And then if they were doing any payments or wanted to fill out their housing deposit, they could bring money or to submit the application fee. But mainly yourself and a knowledge of what you'd like to get done that day is the most important.
Bring money or your parents.
Money or your parents.
What's the most common thing that people say, oh, I should have thought of this before I came?
Mainly right now what we're hoping for is that we'll get, anyone who hasn't applied for admission will say, oh, yeah, there's still time. You can actually still apply until August 19th. That's our closing date for applications this year. But then also it's a great time to register for classes. Classes start August 29th, which is coming up really soon. And in order to do that for first-time students, they need to talk with an academic advisor who will advise them on what classes they should be taking, what's fitting in with their schedule that makes the most sense. So that's a really great thing to get done tomorrow. You can have it checked off your list. It's a huge accomplishment. And ideally, before students meet with the advisors, they would take placement tests in math and English if they're planning on taking those courses. So that lets us know which level is most appropriate for the student to start with. But everything can get done tomorrow, just sort of block off a chunk of time. And then also it's a good idea to touch base with financial aid and student accounts and get those things off your list as well.
Could you be more specific when you say time?
Depends on what students want to do. So if all they want to do is submit their application for admission, that's about a 10-minute process. If they'd like to talk with an academic advisor and register for classes, I would block off probably 20 to 30 minutes to do that. If someone's going to take placement tests, though, that's a bigger chunk of time. The math test can take about 30 minutes to an hour, and the English test will take about an hour to an hour and a half.
Does UAS take credit cards?
Yes, we do.
Frank Conrad, how are you doing?
Good, Jeff, thanks.
So you're changing your hat a little bit before you worked with high school students.
For many years, I was a high school counselor at JDHS and worked on some programs with the district. And right now, I'm fortunate to be working at the university and the other side of things. So, but very connected still to the high school end of things because I'm working now on K-12 outreach.
What exactly does that mean?
We are now looking at reaching out to students and looking at aligning post-secondary to to the K-12 end of things, and making opportunities for students, making them aware, looking at some seamless transitions from high school to college, looking at what programs that students might be looking at. So what we want to do is give students and parents an awareness that that there is definitely life after high school in terms of academic growth and the students that want to go and further their opportunities after high school graduation.
How in the world does one know what they're going to do when they're just entering college?
You know, that's a great question. I've had my own two going through the process itself, and I think the best way is to work with the high school counselors and the advisors at the university side. That's part of my job as well, is to create the opportunities for those folks to get together and talk about different opportunities that students can do. But there's so many options right now for students, so much information that in order to make some clear decisions, I think that working very closely with advisors, with counselors, and keeping the communication link open with parents as well.
Is there I don't want to call this a test because it's not an aptitude test. Is there a test like that some people can take to help make a decision?
Yeah, there are career inventories, and there's tests to take a look. There's the Alaska Career Information System has a real good test that would show kids their interest levels. On some of the other standardized tests, the ACT provides a testing that creates an opportunity for students to take a look and see where their academic strengths match their possible career interests. So those are all very good tools that can be used. There's a wide variety of them, and I would say for students to get a hold of their counselors as well as other resources. Both schools have a career center. Terry Calvin is the district career advisor, and she's phenomenal, and you can connect with her as well.
But how many students are there at UAS?
So we have between about 3,000 and 3,500 students spread between our Juneau campus, Sitka, Ketchikan, and then we have a lot of students throughout the state and even in other states that are part of our online community as well.
What's the most popular degree program?
It really depends what level you're looking at. So a lot of our students start off in the Associate of Arts program, so that's a very popular starting point, even an ending point for some of our students. And some things, programs we're really excited about right now also are the Marine Biology degree and our Northwest Coast Art and Alaska Native Languages and Studies programs. So we have some new faculty members starting this fall, so we're really excited about changes that are happening at the university and encouraging our students to really pursue whatever degree they want, but those are some that we're excited about, some new developments in them this year.
How many degrees does UAS offer?
Ooh, you're stumping me. I believe we have probably between 50 and 80 different programs that you can do, so that's varying between occupational endorsements all the way up through master's degrees. So we have various levels depending on what opportunities the students are looking for and what their end goal is for the education.
All right. Well, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to add.
Just wanted to do a final reminder that tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., so that's Friday, on the Auklate campus in the cafeteria will be the enrollment day. So come get all of your enrollment needs taken care of. If you cannot join us tomorrow for that, you can still apply for admission until August 19th, and you can call our admissions office main phone number at 796-6100 if anybody has any questions about the steps to enrollment, fall classes, anything related to UAS.
How about housing?
Housing as well. Housing is amazing at the Auklate campus in Juneau. And actually, we do still have a few spots in our leadership program, so that provides students who are living on campus during their first year with us with $2,000 towards their housing costs. So that's called our Alaska Leadership Initiative, and we'll have more information about that tomorrow at Enrollment Day as well.
And it's probably not too early to start thinking about scholarships for the future.
Yes, definitely never too early to start thinking about scholarships.
All right, thank you so much for coming by. I've been talking with Margo Connolly Mason and Frank Conrad about UAS Enrollment Day, which starts tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the morning. What's the phone number people can call our website?
796-6100 or uas.alaska.edu.
All right, thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 11th of August, 2016. It's the birthday of the short story writer André Debussy, born Lake Charles, Louisiana, 1936, who said, "We don't have to live great lives. We just have to understand and survive the ones we've got." It's the birthday of Alex Haley, Ithaca, New York, 1921, grew up in Tennessee, sat listening to his mother's family tell stories about their forebears, many of whom were slaves. He went on to be a freelance writer. He did an interview with Malcolm X for Playboy magazine, which then turned into the book, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, came out in 1965. And then Alex Haley began researching his own genealogy, tracing his family back to Gambia, where he went to interview tribal leaders, spent more than 10 years working on that book, writing on yellow legal tablets. The book came out in 1976, Roots, The Saga of an American Family. It was a mixture of fact and fiction, tracing generations of his family from an 18th century slave named Kunta Kinte down to the author himself. It was adapted into a 12-hour television miniseries, and more than 130 million people tuned in to watch it when it was shown on television. It's the birthday of the poet and critic Louise Bogan, born in Livermore Falls, Maine, 1897. W. H. Auden considered her the greatest critic of poetry of the time. He gave the eulogy at her funeral. She went off to New York City. She fell in with William Carlos Williams and Edmund Wilson, started writing reviews, which could be tough on famous poets. Marianne Moore, Wallace Stevens, she said, "They will never surprise anyone again. They are half dead already." She became poetry editor of the New Yorker magazine, and she had a big raucous affair with a younger poet, Theodore Rethke. She wrote to a friend, "I myself have been made to bloom like a Persian rose bush by the enormous lovemaking of Theodore Rethke, who is very, very large, 6'2", 218 pounds, and he writes very, very small lyrics. We have poured rivers of liquor down our throats these last 3 days, and in between have indulged in such bearish antics as I have never before experienced. I hope that one or two immortal lyrics will come out of all this tumbling about." They remained close friends after their romance was over. Here's a poem for today by Joy Sutphen, "My Dog Pal." "Once, in the yellow glow of the hay barn, my father and I met a stray, and that dog stayed and lived with us a while. I named him Pal because he was friendly and reminded me of a storybook dog. Even now, I can see him sitting at my feet, his head tipped slightly to one side, his shoulders squared back against the passing of another boring day. Thin and houndy, he was made for wilder things than fetching sticks and shaking hands with six-year-olds. I think he was a hobo dog, and one day he was gone without a backwards glance. His house, his dish, his supper, bone, nothing there to tie him down." "My Dog Pal" by Joy Sutphen, from First Words, published by Red Dragonfly Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org, and by Lumosity, with a 10-minute fit test to calculate baseline scores and training programs with 50 challenging brain games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 20 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Our first next guest in the studio is Sharon Gateman and Missouri Smythe. Thank you for coming down.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
You're in King Island auditions. And my big question is, how much will you pay me not to audition?
Oh, you know what? We were going to have a meeting tonight discuss that. Uh-huh. So we don't know yet. So you might still have to come. And it's this Saturday, Jeff, and Sunday, right?
Right. It is. Saturday at Northern Light United Church from 11 until 5. And then Sunday, August the 13th from 1 until 5 at Northern Light United Church.
So tell me about King Island. How did it get started? Was it always King Island Christmas?
Well, it was always King Island Christmas. And maybe I'll just start with when it premiered in 1990 we're getting up there. A story King Island, Gene Rogers had written the book based on a story that Ree Mignot had shared with her from Ree Mignot's experiences on King Island when she was there with her husband. While her husband was working for the federal government, she decided to teach. And so while she was teaching there, apparently every year there was a ship, the North Star, who would come and bring supplies for the King Island villagers. And so she shared the story with Gene Rogers, and then Gene thought, wow, what a lovely storybook.
If I might jump in, and also I have this great magazine article that I'm looking at. So just to back up a minute, it was produced for the first time by Perseverance Theater in 1997.
That's it, yes.
And that continued for a long time. And the story, as Missouri was saying, it all began on King Island, Bering Sea. These islanders awaited the North Star every year because it brought their winter supplies, the village priest. And this year, 1952, I believe it was, when we saw it, there was such a big storm brewing that the villagers had to carry their umiak over the mountain to the leeward side, and that's how they got the priest, and that's how they got the supplies. And so Missouri has all these great adjectives as to why this story and ultimately the oratorio are so incredible. And what were those, like, inspirational?
Oh, yes, yeah. The piece is beautiful because it talks about resilience, it talks about faith, it talks about trust. It speaks to the power of a group of people getting together and making this trip with encouragement. And not only the older people went, but also the younger children went. And so those are wonderful role models for young people, you know. And so that's the wonderful thing about the music in King Island.
Oh, no, the wonderful thing about the music is that there's so many different kinds of music.
Yeah.
Everything from, you know, like beautiful, sweet music to calypso to
chorale,
gospel. I mean, it's got everything in it. And I just want to point out before we forget, if that's okay, that we did this for the first time in 2010, our little trio of Missouri Smythe, who is the musical director, Deborah Smith, who is the stage director, and I'm just the producer. And so we did it in 2010 to honor Ree Mignot and Gene Rogers and raise some money for the new arts building, yes, we hope, in their names. And we were able to give quite a large check to the Arts Council because the community was so incredibly generous.
That's true.
And so then we did it in 2012 again because we went with the cast to the Edinburgh Fringe, and Jeff, your amazing daughter, Kelly Connerton, was in that. And I'm sure you know it was an unbelievable experience.
It was. It was. And again, it's almost that trip was almost similar to the story of King Island. The challenges that we had to get over the mountain or over the river to get to Edinburgh, raising money. There were little ones involved and adults involved as well. And when we got there, it was.
It was so worth
yes,
it. And
yes,
then
it was. Very
we
memorable.
Said, we're never doing this again.
Right.
And because you know what, Jeff, the real thing, we're getting older, and it's time for the next generation, for young people such as your daughter, to step in and start doing this every 2 or 3 years. But we like to think of it as a big holiday tradition, and as is our transition, we're doing it as another fundraiser, this time for all the 30-plus agencies of the United Way and the United Way Southeast. So it's not about us getting rich or anything. It's about sharing this beautiful, beautiful story that, as we said, was adapted from Ree's words by both of them, the late, great Ree Munoz and also Gene Rogers. But our friend, former Alaskan playwright Deborah Vort, adapted the story as the oratorio, and then she worked with
David Friedman, who composed the music. And
he's got Disney credits, hasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, yeah. He does. He has Disney credit with Beauty and the Beast. And so he, again, incredible music and very lively. And the lovely thing about the music is it's very memorable, easy to sing. And so we are inviting those who have been in King Island before and the new folks to come and to try out and to join the three of us and in supporting United Way and all the organizations. And like a last hurrah, I would say, and so it'll
just
be a
that
fabulous
time of our lives.
I know.
Farewell. But
auditions haven't started yet, Sharon.
But you know what? I think, as Missouri said, whether you've sung in this before, whether you've seen it before and thought, I could do that, you know, or I'd like to do that. Missouri and Deb are so good at working with all skill levels. I don't think you should be afraid to try out. I think you should call Missouri, even in the middle of the night, if you just decide, yes, I should do that. What's your phone number, Missouri?
Well, I don't know about the middle of the night. I'll probably go to Sharon's voice message. But anyway, my phone number is 209-6835. 209-6835. And again, just as Sharon said, do not be afraid to come and try out, because what we are looking for is just your voice, how high and how low, the range of your voice, and so that we can best fit you into the chorus and where you would serve.
And if
the
you're
chorus
fishing
line
this weekend, you can call Missouri next week, too, because we have a pickup day.
Yes, and that pickup day is Sunday, August the 21st, from 1 until 3.
How's that?
Is this going to be an oratorio?
Yes, it will be an oratorio again.
Can you describe what an oratorio is for those people?
Well, it's all singing. It's just all singing, right?
Yes.
It tells a story. It's not an opera, because that would be much more spectacle,
right,
I think. It's
right.
Very stripped away, and it's very much dependent upon the music and the story. Otherwise, it's nothing. So that's a good question. Yeah.
In the past, King Island has been staged as a huge production with a set and with, staging, light. And at one time, we even had an orchestra, because there is orchestration that's written for it. But I think originally, when it was put together, it was considered to be an oratorio. So when we did it in 2010 as an oratorio, many of those who attended it so appreciated it, because they heard the words.
Heard the words.
Yes, heard the words and the messages of the song, which they had not heard before when it was staged. Not saying it didn't happen, but they were able to understand the story a little bit more.
Yeah,
with the oratorio.
This will be the first time we do it without Ree and Gene in the audience at least one night. That's kind of sad, huh, Jeff?
You're making me cry.
I know, yeah.
And there will be a couple of cast members who have sung with us before that won't be joining us this time as well. And so that's the lovely part about it. It's a tribute to them and the love that they had for this production. And so we'd like to recognize them as well.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, if you're not familiar with King Island, you can probably go over to the Arts Council and get a CD, or Jeff will start playing it daily, maybe starting December. But it's going to be performed the Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving in the Valley, and then in town at the Jack on Gallery Walk weekend. There's only 7 performances. I believe there's only 1 rehearsal a week until early November,
yes.
Right?
Yes, that is correct. And again, you know, with the performances, it's an hour. It's an hour of music. And, of course, we have the fabulous Laurie Higgy, who will be playing piano for us, and she was one of the first.
And Jeff will be in the audience sobbing because it's such an emotional thing, especially seeing your kid up there.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Every time I hear her sing, I can start to cry.
Oh. Yeah. That's what music's supposed to do, isn't it?
So what else do you want to know?
How many people are in the cast?
Well, depends how many auditions.
Yes, it depends on how many try out. I think in the past we've had 50, 60, including young people who have sung as well.
Do you have to know how to sing, or is there room for people just to mill around the stage?
Mill around the stage? No,
no,
there
are no millings.
No millings.
Yeah, I'm Naomi Miller, and I have to sit as soon as I say welcome, welcome. No, no millers.
And, you know, if I can just give a shout-out, Sharon just says that she's just a producer, but really Sharon is the backbone with regards to getting our advertising out there and getting all the pieces and all of the folks together. So, Sharon, I want to honor you and to recognize your work, because that is most, most important for those of us who are artists, and I know. So thank you, Sharon,
oh
for
gosh.
All the work that you have done, you know, with King Island.
Now I'm verklempt. You and me, Jeff. Thank you, Missouri.
You're welcome.
Missouri Smith and Sharon Gateman. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might forget to ask.
Well, just a reminder again of the auditions. They're Saturday, August the 12th, this Saturday, from 11 until 5 at Northern Light United Church, and then Sunday, August the 13th, from 1 until 5 o'clock. And then we have pickup auditions or callbacks August the 21st from 1 until 3 at Northern Light United Church.
So, wait, Saturday is the 13th.
Saturday's the 13th. Sorry. Saturday's the 12th.
Ah.
Yes. Thank you for that. Sunday is the 13th.
It?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought tomorrow was the 12th.
According to my calendar, tomorrow's the 12th.
Oh, yeah. Okay, then let's correct that. Boy, I've got it written down here on them. Saturday,
thank
August
you,
the 13th from 11 until 5. Sunday, August the 14th. That's it, from 1 until 5. And then Sunday, August the 21st.
Plus 7, from
1 until 3, yes. Yes.
Thank
and just
you.
A reminder, folks, really quickly, we will have scores of King Island there for you to sing if you're familiar with the music, or you can bring your own.
And there's some of her music now.
Can you try it via Skype?
Can you try out via Skype?
Via Skype. That would
Why
be
not?
Interesting. Never done it, but I guess we could give it a go.
Yeah. You could do the whole performance on Skype.
Yes.
We could. Jeff's going to arrange for that. We'll put that in the program. Skyper.
Really
I'll be the Miller, you be the Skyper. I could say something.
So come join us to go over the mountain.
I think you better say goodbye to us. Yeah. It sounds important, Jeff. Thanks for having us.
little bit of music to get you warmed up for King Island Christmas. In the studio with me next is Corinne Conlon and Sarah Lewis here to talk about Sarah's Wild Kitchen Walk, which is coming up as part of the Cooperative Extension Service. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, what is a Wild Kitchen Walk?
Well, it's wild. That's the first thing. So what we, Corinne and Amy Houck and I, we started doing what we decided to call Wild Kitchen Walks in April, and we've had two already. So, and what they are basically is there's a lot of interest in wild harvest all around our area. Of course, there's the perennial favorites, which are berries. But we actually started in April so that we could get people started knowing what kind of spring greens. And then we also did a beach greens walk. And what we do is we do a walk where we harvest, and then we would go to a kitchen. And Corinne and Amy are kitchen goddesses. And so they've put together lots of recipes in which we actually use in creative ways the things that we harvest. And so we did that in April and May. And so this that's coming up, we're actually calling a Wild Kitchen Retreat because we're going to make it an all-day event. It's going to be out at the Eagle River United Methodist Camp. I'm letting people know that, though I do need people to pre-register, and I'll give information about that because we need to know how many, you know, ingredients and things to buy and planning. So don't just show up at the camp there. Do give us a call beforehand. But it's going to be on Sunday, August 28th from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. It will include both lunch and dinner, and I want to say strongly that that lunch and dinner will both include things that we've harvested. So we'll be doing lots of recipes while we're there. And there will be other things, though, too. This is why we're calling it a retreat instead of just a Wild Kitchen Walk, because, like, Corinne will talk a little bit about some of the other classes that, you know, that aren't actually outdoors, some of the things when we get back to the camp. Corinne.
Okay. So we've kind of thrown around a lot of different ideas. And this year, I mean, we had this great plan in the fall of, like, month by month kind of walks, and this summer has just been kind of crazy with everything speeding up and being 6 weeks ahead of time. So some of the other things that we thought about for the retreat was just to I'm going to do another PowerPoint presentation about foraging throughout the seasons so that you can kind of gear up for next year. So then you start thinking about what are the first things that come up when the first greens appear, and what happens when the wetlands start turning green, what kind of things to look at, just to get people's minds around kind of the upcoming year. We also talked about just having some, like, slower kind of discussion times where we can, you know, ask questions and share information, share kind of things that we've learned, because throughout this whole process, I think we've always been amazed at what other things people share with us, like things that they've learned, ways that they harvest or they use that harvest. And that's a great opportunity to all be together.
Yeah, and it is actually an event that is for people who are beginners as well as people who are experienced, because sometimes people who are experienced, they may want to learn new recipes, et cetera, and they also do have information to share, like Corinne was talking about. And so it's for both beginners and intermediate and advanced wild harvesters. Also, if you are a cook or a chef, whether for fun or for your business, whatever, you can look at the wild harvest part of it as well if you've got the expertise in the kitchen. So you can kind of go, all these different folks can get together.
Now, in my way of thinking, one of the most important things is not only what to eat, but what not to eat.
Yes, we do have that. We have, yeah, it's edibles. We point out the things that are edibles. We may, we're not positive on this one, we may be able to do some mushroom stuff. And, of course, we talk a bit about what you want to be looking for on that. Some of the other things that we're hoping, as Corinne was saying, everything came really early this year. So we planned for this way back when we thought there would definitely be blueberries available. And there may still be some, but we may also get cranberries, high bush cranberries, lingonberries. We're hoping for some Labrador tea. And like I said, possibly mushrooms. And frankly, on all of the walks we've done, we've found other things that we didn't necessarily plan for or that we didn't know whether we were going to see. But we have lots of recipes to be able to be flexible and add those things into what we make in the kitchen.
And that's what's been kind of good, too, about it is that you know, we have these recipes that we're going to use, but and that's been the fun thing, too, is just kind of experimenting and going, well, what if I throw a little bit of lovage in this dish? You know, how does that change the flavor? Or, you know, whatever we find, you can kind of add to and, you know, and kind of experiment. And I think sometimes we get so focused on recipes and doing everything very precisely. And when you're cooking based on what you're foraged, you have to be a little bit looser about how that recipe looks.
Do you have any favorite recipes?
You know, so Amy and I usually come up with the recipes for the walk. And so we were doing this, you know, tidal flats, you know, out at Boy Scout Beach and harvesting, you know, beach asparagus and goose tongue. We found some lovage. And so then twisted stalk, and I was like, you know, the stem of twisted stalk tastes very much like cucumber. And it was still early enough in May to kind of really use it. And so I was like, you know, this would be really good in tzatziki. And it really was. And so we kind of did a whole theme on different kind of Middle Eastern, Syrian kind of things. So we made a fatya, which is a kind of a Syrian bread dough with greens in it. I think, but, I mean, there's, you know, spruce tip rhubarb salsa was great. I don't think we've really had anything that people were like, yeah, not such a big fan of.
Yeah, so yeah. Everything's worked out really well. One of the things that we're going to do in this one that we haven't done yet is we are going to have a mocktail hour. So there are lots of things out there that make great syrups that you can add to fizzy drinks and other drinks if you wish to. We won't be doing any cocktails at it, but we will be doing mocktails because that's one thing that's just a fun thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how about you? What's your favorite?
Oh, what's my favorite? I have always liked anything with spruce tip in it. I like that flavor. And so Corrine mentioned the salsa that was rhubarb spruce tip. That was great. There was a spruce tip syrup that we made. So those I really, really like.
Now, when you're talking about eating edibles, are you talking about just the flavor of the edibles is good enough, or do you like to add extra spice to them?
Oh, gosh, you know, spice is all a personal thing.
Right.
Yeah, we do. Like, so, like the salsa, you could make it, you could add lots of peppers to that if you wanted to. And so, you know, and some things we're not necessarily used to the strength sometimes of the flavor of things that are wild. We're not quite used to how green they taste. So sometimes there's a little bit of a palate shift that you need to do. And it's not that you're wanting, you don't ever want to hide the flavors of a lot of these things, but you do want to be putting them with, learning what you can put them with that actually enhances their flavor. And if you're talking about introducing them to your family, putting them in recipes that are familiar, it's a really great way to do it. So, like when we were talking about that tzatziki, someone might not necessarily know what to do with twisted stock, and it has a pretty green flavor, but when you put it in the tzatziki, which is kind of a favorite for a lot of people because there's garlic and, you know, sour cream and yogurt, you can really use that flavor in such a way that it seems familiar, seems more familiar.
What kind of implements do you need?
Oh, okay. So for the retreat, basically you can just come. There will be hiking. We're not exactly sure where yet because that's going to kind of depend on where we can find some things. But you do want to expect at least a moderate hike. We're not going to do any kind of difficult hike, but an easy to moderate hike. Dress for the weather. We will have time, of course, hopefully to dry out and things like that in the lodge. So we will not be outdoors all day. So that's something, you know, there will be time to dry out. As I mentioned, lunch and dinner are included. If you have dietary preferences, we do a pretty good job of getting recipes that sort of cross vegetarian, vegan, et cetera. So there's typically enough for someone who just has dietary preferences to be able to find what they enjoy. If anybody has dietary requirements, like allergies or anything like that, they do need to let me know when they register or after they register, let me know those so that we know if we need to accommodate any of those.
Mm-hmm. So basically, yeah. So, like, because we'll be going outside and we'll be doing foraging walks, you know, your extra tough boots and, you know, dry, warm clothes, rain gear, rain pants, those kind of things are really helpful for that kind of walk.
Rubber gloves for harvesting. That's one thing that we often recommend that people, in case we might be picking things that are in spiny areas or...
Right, and usually we ask people to bring some type of bag. Usually Ziploc bags work really well just to kind of harvest different things. And it's nice to be able to pick them and separate them, so having multiple bags is very useful.
And if you're having a good time, you can eat your rubber gloves.
Right.
We don't promote that.
Wait a minute, the cookbook coming out.
That's one of the unedible stuff.
That's a great question about the cookbook. When's the cookbook coming out? We do actually hope at the end of this season to actually put together all of the recipes that we've been doing over the course of this summer into one publication. And I'm not exactly sure how we're going to put that out. Maybe it'll be on the Cooperative Extension website. Maybe it'll be paper. Maybe it'll be both. We'll figure that out. But, yeah, there's been a lot of good recipes created.
All right. Thanks so much for coming by, Sarah, and come in. Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgot to ask.
Yeah, actually, we do need people to pre-register. You can register at bit.ly/wildkitchen16. If that's too complicated, you can call 523-3280 and talk to Susie or Sarah, and we can help you get registered.
And it's been pretty amazing how popular, like, the two walks that we've been doing, that we've done so far have been. So
register early.
Register early so you don't miss it.
All right. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
You never knew in Peter and the Starcatcher, beginning August 16th at Perseverance Theater. In this wacky comedy filled with music and magic, learn the story behind the story of Peter Pan. Discover how the captain got his hook, the crocodile his TikTok, and meet Molly Astor, the adventurous young girl who not only saves the world, but helps an orphan boy become the flying hero we all love. For information or tickets, go to ptalaska.org or call our box office at 463-TIXS or visit the Jack.
So that's 10 minutes before the hour, and you are tuned into it June afternoon. Our last guest in the studio is Nancy DeTourney. Thanks for coming in, Nancy.
Had to swim across the street.
It's that kind of day.
It's that kind of day. It's okay. It's a little thick. Keeps you slowed down a little bit, but it's okay. It feels great. So let's see. We have actually, if you want to, like, change the weather at 5:30 this evening, you can go to Rockwell and do Cuban salsa. It'll be warm it up a little bit. And then there's tango dancing after that at 7 o'clock. David Woody at 7 o'clock is doing a lecture at the City Museum. I believe he's the artist on display there. So
you're talking about the art and how he came up with it.
Oh, okay. That'll be a nice opportunity to visit with him. There's also, it's a whole night of dancing. So we got the Cuban salsa, we got the tango, and then there's West Coast Swing. Also, they're doing A Midsummer Night Dream out in the Valley at the Valley Library, part of the Folio Celebration, the Shakespeare Celebration. Theater in the Rough is, of course, sponsoring all of that and doing all the readings. And they're doing a great job. It's amazing what's going on. There's open mic with Terry Tibbett and Matt Barnes at 9 o'clock at the Alaskan Hotel. And there's Abiyoki Karaoke out at McGivney's. So let's see. Salmon Derby starts. Of course, the weather's really icky, so it must be Salmon Derby time. That's how it is. So, and also, that starts on Friday and it goes all day. And then UAS enrollment open house is on Friday at 9 a.m. to 2:30. Have fun with Hamlet at the Slam. I think this is a kids program at 10 o'clock in the morning at the Slam.
You've got a whole week of kids activities.
Yeah, it's going to be, I heard somebody talking about them. It really looks like, I wish I was a kid. I wonder if they would let me in if I pretend to be short. I don't know. Anyway, Dames in Defense are out at the Airport Shopping Mall, Shopping Center, 4 to 6 p.m. This is a defense class, I think, that Alex Brown maybe is doing. There is a Rock Around the Block Friday night. It's our last Rock Around the Block party for the summer. It is the Downtown String Band. And, yes, it's going to rain, and we're just going to embrace that because we don't have the jack. So there'll be a City Slicker contest. Wear your best raincoat, and we'll have prizes for the best raincoats. It's the Downtown String Band. It's going to be a lot of fun. You know, I was remembering when our kids, back in the day when there was Marine Park and all, we would go down there and sit in puddles and have a really good time. We're going to have tents up. It's going to be fabulous. And it only says chance of rain in the weather forecast, so I think we're okay. Come on down, 5:30 to 7. The food trucks will be open. We got Happy Camper. We got Pucker Wilson. At 6:30, Tiny Post Office Concert Number 11 over at Kindred Post with Dawson Walker and a few other folks. They'll be doing storytelling and drawing while the music goes on. It sounds like it's a lot of fun. That's going to be from 6:30 to 8:30. And apparently these kids are leaving town, so this is your last opportunity to enjoy them. They'll be reading Hamlet at the Slam at 7 o'clock. So.
Greetings, and Hamlet is my favorite.
So there you have it. You need to go over there at 7 o'clock. On Saturday, again, you're out fishing, but then there's also all kinds of Shakespeare going on, 10 o'clock. And these are all at McPheeters Hall, I believe. Henry VI, Part 1. There is the second Saturday market out at the Airport Shopping Center at 10 to 3 in the morning until the afternoon. Words, Words, Words. This is at the Slam. I think that's part of the kids' program. Henry VI, Part 2 at 1 o'clock at McPheeters Hall. There's the historical walking tour at the City Museum. Henry VI, Part 3 at McPheeters Hall at 4 o'clock. And then Richard III at 7. Oh, my goodness.
We've had an interesting crowd. There's only been a couple of people. Some of this time it's been 30 or 40.
The Jack is the host for the Monday night shows, and I think there were maybe 30 people there, 40 people there last Monday. It was a really good turnout. Sunday is your last day for the Salmon Derby, and we also do our guided art tour. So if you're interested in learning more about public art in town, take that tour someday. On Monday, the Makerspace is open out on Anka Street. There's an introduction to belly dancing if you're interested in that. You can go. There's a phone number to call to find out where that happens. As You Like It at the Jack on Monday night at 7 o'clock. The Shakespeare things are all free, too. We should just mention that. It's just amazing. Tuesday, there's the summer reading program, a teen book buffet at the Valley Library. There is, let's see, The Merry Wives of Windsor out at the Egan Library. And then on Wednesday, school starts. Oh, wow.
What do you know?
You got your pencil sharpened? You ready? But, you know, remember to drive carefully and all that sort of stuff because the kids will be out and everybody's excited and all that sort of stuff on Wednesday. I think that's the kindergartners don't start quite yet, but they'll be doing Titus Andronicus at Rockwell on Wednesday night. So that's kind of sums it up for the whole week. A little bit quieter than some weeks, but it's because we're all getting geared up to go fishing and then go to school.
Mentor attorney, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. We'll see you at something.
This is Bird Note. A 16-inch pileated woodpecker is hammering its massive chisel of a bill against a cedar trunk, making large rectangular incisions, some nearly a foot long. This carpenter seeks out another. Within the trunk swarm many thousands of carpenter ants. The half-inch-long black ants have themselves excavated a nesting colony in the heart of the living tree. The woodpecker's sticky tongue reaches 5 inches beyond the tip of the bill into the trunk, lapping up hundreds of ants. More than half of the pileated's entire food intake may be ants. Woodpeckers as a group eat far more ants than do most birds, swallowing them whole. Many other vertebrates studiously avoid ants because of their stings or noxious chemical deterrents, like formic acid. Another member of the woodpecker family, the northern flicker, is known to have ingested over 5,000 ants in one sitting. While the pileated woodpecker and northern flicker also eat a variety of other insects and berries, they always love to have a good supply of ants. Writers for BirdNote include Bob Sundstrom, Francis Wood, Ellen Blackstone, and Todd Peterson. Our producers, John Kessler. I'm Michael Stein.
Afternoon, we'll talk with Andy Klein. We'll be talking with Cheryl Snyder about Montes Yahoo's Juno concert next month. We'll get the details about Perseverance Theater's new production of Peter and the Starcatcher. We'll highlight Big Brothers, Big Sisters. We'll also get a preview of Friday night's Kindred Post concert. It's coming up tomorrow on a Juno afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, low temperatures around 55 degrees. Forecast for Friday, rain likely with mainly before 1 p.m. Forecast for Saturday, rain, high temperatures near 59. Sunday, rain temperatures with high temperatures near 58. And Monday, rain with cloudy and a higher near 58 degrees. Sadam.